With the 20th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Hello, everyone. I'm Chris McPherson, and welcome to the Friday night edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. And I'm joined, as always, by the illustrious Fran Duffy as we're here inside the hotel in beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana.
It's the night before the big day. It's the quarterbacks, running backs, and wide receivers working out on Saturday. You can see it on NFL Network. It's going to be a huge day for a lot of different prospects. So hope to touch on a lot of those guys here tonight.
Fran, every day is a big day here at the Combine.
That's true. Every day is a big day.
Let's get into the headlines. We have a meaty show today. We have a couple one-on-one interviews with a pair of wide receivers, Stephon Diggs from Maryland and Mario
Alford
from West Virginia. Yes, mind slipping a little bit. A lot to take in there. We're also going to hear from Bruce Feldman from Fox Sports, who's going to give us some great insight into Chip Kelly and discuss some of his freak athletes, because Fran always refers to the freak athletes list when discussing his favorite players in this year's draft class. So we brought Bruce Feldman on to talk about some of those players. Our pick six tonight, we're actually going to have our own little mini draft, since on Saturday the quarterbacks, running backs, and wide receivers will take to the field at Lucas Oil Stadium. We are going to have a draft, and we're going to select, basically go back and forth, which of those players that we would select. And we have some, you know, interesting rules along in there. We're also going to have a little either-or for our game tonight. But first, let's get into the headlines of the day in our Draft Buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, so I guess we got to start with Florida State quarterback Jameis Winston. He addressed the media today, but first, there was a report out that he had to have an MRI and undergo some additional examinations because of a nerve condition in his shoulder. Apparently, it's not going to be anything long-term, but you know, for someone who not only threw a lot as a quarterback, but was also a pitcher in baseball, might be something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. Anytime, and you know how it is here at the Combine, where every day of media availability, it's supposed to be a certain group of positions. So the first day, it's O-line tight ends. The second day, it's quarterbacks, running backs, and receivers. The third day, the front seven. Fourth day is secondary. Well, if one of those guys doesn't show up on his day that he's supposed to speak to the media, more often than not, it's because they had some kind of a medical issue. And as you know, that happens often. You know, there's usually close to 20 guys that are at any particular position that don't speak. So, and we just don't hear about it because it's not the number one player in the draft. Jameis Winston was supposed to speak on Thursday. He ended up speaking today on Friday, and that was because of this shoulder issue. I don't know if I'm going to pay it too much mind right now. We'll see if it develops into something more in the future.
Furthermore, when he addressed the media on Friday, he said of the comparison between he and Marcus Mariota to be the top quarterback in this draft class, Jameis said, "Don't even talk about myself and Mariota. A week from now, you're not going to be comparing us. I want to be in the discussion with Peyton Manning because I'm trying to win the Super Bowl next season." Winston, very bold, very confident, very charismatic during his press conference. I don't know if I'm a believer, quite honestly, but nonetheless, though, really putting all of his chips into the middle, so to speak, in terms of what he hopes to do at the next level.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, the guy exudes confidence. You heard about the comments he made in terms of being compared to guys like Manning and Brady. He also brought up that picture that was that went viral last week of him looking not so flattering from during his workouts. But he said, "Look, I know I look good, so I'm okay." So he definitely is one of the more confident players that we've heard speak at the Combine over the last few years. I'm excited to see him throw tomorrow.
All right, let's get to the action on the field that took place on Friday. It was the offensive lineman and the tight ends performing in the 40-yard dash and also the other position drills. Tony Pauline, who is covering the draft, not just for draftinsider.net, but doing some additional work for us here on philadelphiaeagles.com, gave his risers and sliders list, the players who helped their draft stock on Friday and the guys who hurt their cause. And atop of the list is a former Chip Kelly player in Jake Fisher, declared by Pauline as the winner of the offensive line group Friday morning. Very athletic, posted a 40-yard dash time of around 5 seconds, a short shuttle mark of 4.33 seconds, one of the best in the group overall, but just also very fluid and athletic during the position drills.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at all the major tests for the offensive line, and Fisher finished in the top five, in most cases the top three, in pretty much every test. So you checked all the boxes there with Fisher, a guy we talked about at length last night, and a guy that I really, really like, and I like him more than some of the other big-name prospects. Not that he's got as high an upside as a La'el Collins or as a TJ Clemmings, but I thought he was a little bit cleaner on tape in terms of his technique, and it was good to see him back it up with a really good athletic showing here today at Indianapolis.
All right, some of the other names. Here's a name who I've not heard of before the process, but he's generating a lot of buzz this week in Indy. Mitch Morse, tackle from Missouri, also helped his cause, had 36 reps on the bench, which was a top mark among the offensive linemen. Guard Jameel Douglas from Arizona State. Guard Ali Marpet from Division III Hobart. Not a surprise there. He was expected to test well. The other risers, Cam Irving, the interior lineman from Florida State. DJ Humphreys from Florida, the offensive tackle, very athletic. And the last player, the one tight end out of the group for Pauline, his 40-yard dash time was not as good as I think other people expected, but he still did well in the drills, and Pauline still thought he helped his cause, and that's Max Williams from Minnesota. And the big question here, Fran, the last couple of years there have been a slew of tight ends who have gone in the first round. Will that trend continue this season? Really, Max Williams seems to be the only guy that's discussed in that first round range. Did he do enough to keep himself in that conversation?
I think so. I mean, look, Max Williams is a guy that I think on tape looked like a top 20 prospect. Not that he's a top 20 pick, but top 20 overall prospect, just from what I saw from his time at Minnesota. You know, obviously the 40-yard dash time wasn't ideal, but you look at his short shuttle, looking at, you know, and that kind of measures his quickness, his ability to separate at the top of his stem. 4.37 on the short shuttle was one of the best times for the tight end position. So, you know, I think that you look at Max Williams, you look at his body of work, what he did between the lines during his time with the Gophers. Was it a great day in his workouts? No, I don't think it was a great day in terms of the time drills where the measurables happen. But, you know, I think overall Williams is still the best of the group. And I think ultimately I think he's probably going to slide into that first round.
All right, so the sliders, two sliders, Rob Crisp, obviously not so crisp, from North Carolina State, and center B.J. Finney from Kansas State were the two players who struggled during the position drills and did not help their draft stock. All right, we're going to go into our Fran versus the machine. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at the three position groups we're discussing in detail tonight, the quarterbacks, running backs, and wide receivers. We're comparing Fran's positional ranking, his top five rankings, against those of Mike Mayock, Mel Kiper, Josh Norris of Roto-World, and Joel Klatt from Fox Sports, and see what the consensus is, see where Fran differs, and kind of let him explain himself a little bit, put his feet to the fire, so to speak.
Yeah, and again, right now, look.
It sounds like excuses coming
up.
Hold
on. All I'm going to say is that, especially with these skill positions, you look at the quarterback position, the running back position, and then to a slightly lesser extent, the wide receiver position. I know that a lot of people on Twitter today were asking, oh, well, are these the top five players that you see as best fits for the Eagles? No, that is not necessarily the case. A lot of these guys, it's just overall fit, and that's one of the things that when you look around the media, everybody is kind of looking at what they individually think about each of these positions. So since I'm not looking solely at the Eagles, these aren't five guys that I think are the best fits in Philadelphia. But just from what I've seen, I think these are the top five guys, and I still have a lot of work to do at every single position.
All right, so we are going to start with the quarterback position. The consensus, Jameis Winston, 1 point over Marcus Mariota. That were the 1-2, really no questions there. Number three, Brett Hundley of USC. Number four, Garrett Grayson of Colorado State. And number five, Bryce Petty of Baylor. Fran, we'll go into your rankings. You have Winston 1, Mariota 2. You have Grayson at 3. You're a fan of his game. Blake Sims, number 4. And this guy, this is one that you've been beating the drum for a couple times on the podcast, Hudson Mason of Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Winston Mariota, look, I really, really like both players. And when you look at what their, you know, what their body of work has looked like during their time in college, it's really easy to see why these are the two, you know, two of the top prospects in this draft. As far as Winston, great size, his mental processing, and his the competitive traits that he showed throughout his time at Florida State, just through the roof. I mean, his ability on third down, his ability in the red zone, obviously in come-from-behind situations, leading his team to victory. You saw it in the national title game last year, you know, just his ability to lead his team down to win the championship against a very, very tough Auburn team. And then, obviously, his ability to play within the pocket, anticipation throws. I mean, he makes more than a handful each and every game. It's really, really impressive to see how far he's come, even just from his redshirt freshman year to his redshirt sophomore season in 2014 in that category. So Winston is very, very impressive. And Mariota, look, obviously there's not a lot that needs to be said. You have the ability to be able to stress a defense on the perimeter with his legs. He can make throws on the run. He's very accurate. I think he's got the arm strength to stretch the defense vertically. So a very poised guy that I think will, you know, bring a lot of value to whatever team drafts him. So those are the two top guys for me. Grayson at number three. The big issue there is just he's not a very, you know, he's not a great athlete. He's very, he needs to get faster in everything that he does. But another one of these guys that is able to make anticipation throws, show some poise in the pocket. I think he's got to improve a little bit from the accuracy standpoint, but I think Grayson brings a lot to the table.
All right, let's move on to the running backs. Number one in the consensus, we'll go through the consensus rankings first, Melvin Gordon at number one with 19 points, 1 point ahead of Todd Gurley of Georgia with 18. Tied for third, Nebraska's Ameer Abdullah had 9 points, along with Indiana's Tevin Coleman. And then fifth in the consensus rankings, Duke Johnson from Miami. Fran does not have Melvin Gordon in his top five.
That's going to be the big one that everyone's going to ask me about.
So we'll go Todd Gurley, number one for Fran. T.J. Yeldon of Alabama, number two. Abdullah, three. Jay Ajayi of Boise State at four. And Tevin Coleman at five. But obviously the big question, Fran, no Melvin Gordon after being number one in the consensus rankings.
Yeah, I mean, look, when I look at running backs, the number one thing that you're looking for is vision and instincts and the ability to create your own yards on a consistent basis. And you're going to do that with one of three ways. Either you're going to do it with good vision, like we talked about, the ability to be patient, see the forest through the trees, wait for a hole to open, and be able to see things before they happen so you can get through the hole and pick up positive yardage. Or you can create your own yardage by having great wiggle. Make that first unblocked defender miss is a key trait that you look for with running backs. And then the ability to have great contact balance, not go down on first contact, run through arm tackles. You want to see guys that aren't going to get knocked down just by, you know, a simple swat from a defensive lineman in his lower half. So, you know, you look at the ability to create your own yardage. And then this, look, this is a category where obviously Melvin Gordon is through the roof, and that's burst. He's got a great burst. When he gets his, when he sticks his foot in the ground and gets downhill, Melvin Gordon is as impressive as any back in this class. But with his vision and instincts, his third down value, I think, is questionable as well. So we'll see how he does in drills in terms of catching the football tomorrow. But those are the things that kind of dropped him a little bit for me. But you look at Gurley, I think he's the complete package in terms of being able to win between the tackles and out in the perimeter. T.J. Yeldon is a guy that I'm very, very high on, a smooth, elusive, patient runner. I think he shows really good vision. He's got three down value. I think he could be a better pro than he was a college player, even though he's a three-year key starter, not necessarily a starter, but a key player in that Alabama Crimson Tide offense. You know, Ameer Abdullah, look, a small, obviously on the smaller side, but I think he's going to test really, really well. His character is off the charts. He brings special teams value. He brings third down value. Jay Ajayi from Boise State, he was born in England, a competitive runner, very balanced skill set. I really like his physical tools. And Tevin Coleman is a guy, I think he's a slasher, three down potential because of his blocking and receiving abilities, and he's got really good speed, deceptive speed in the open field. So five guys that I saw had really good vision, brought three down value, and that's why I brought them ahead of Melvin Gordon.
All right, you're starting to sweat here a little bit. It's, you know, we're in the single digits here in Indianapolis. It's was negative five this morning, and you're feeling a little pressure here.
I like the running back position.
Okay. We go to wide receivers. We'll go with the consensus first. A tie at the top with Amari Cooper of Alabama and Kevin White of West Virginia. Number three, Devontae Parker of Louisville. Number four, Dorial Green-Beckham of Missouri and Oklahoma. And number five, we have a tie, Brashad Perryman of Central Florida and Devin Funchess of Michigan. Let's go to Fran's rankings. He has Kevin White number one, Cooper number two. He's a fan of Perryman, who's number three. You have Funchess at four, and Sammy Coates of Auburn, who's expected to do exceptionally well in the drills on Saturday, at number five. Devontae Parker, the one name noticeably absent from your rankings.
Sure. I mean, and look, when I look at a receiver position, obviously it's going to start with athletic ability, the ability to be able to separate at the top of a stem, avoid contact. Can you bring yards after a catch? Athleticism, you know, brings all that together. And look, his hands, his ability to catch the football. I mean, it's good to be able to separate, and you could separate in a number of different ways, but obviously you have to be able to consistently catch the football and or at least win in contested situations, which I think is a guy something that a guy like Sammy Coates really brings to the table. Sure, he had a lot of focus drops on tape, but you know, you can watch him, and he makes a number of highly contested catches down the field, looking balls in, and it was just really, really impressive to me on tape when you factor in his physical tools. So that's why he's in my top five. Kevin White, I think, is very, very similar to a guy like Brashad Perryman. They have very, very similar skill sets, both just about 6'3", over 210 pounds. I think they would both run in the same range. Unfortunately, Perryman's not going to work out tomorrow, but you look at him and White, I think they're very, very similar in terms of what they bring to the table. Amari Cooper, look, a guy at 6'1", 202, was extremely productive this year. I think he's going to run well this week, but you know, I think with his size, there's certain ways that he can win, okay? And so you look at a guy like Kevin White, I think he can play, and Josh Norris puts this perfectly when he talks about receivers. He can win at the big game and in the small game, with, you know, the ability to win with quickness or with size. White's got the ability to do that. I think Cooper can do that, but I think he still has to prove his ability to go up and catch the football in contested situations. So that's why I have White ahead of Cooper. Overall, it's another very, very strong class. And look, teams are going to look at this group like they did last year. It's about what you want. It's like, you know, Mike Mayock puts it in a way. It's like flavors of ice cream, whether you want chocolate or vanilla or strawberry. The receiver position has every flavor you want. It's a matter of you deciding what you need for your football team.
Which receiver would be coffee-flavored ice cream? That's my favorite.
Coffee flavor, I'm going to go Sammy Coates.
There you
go. Give you a little shot of energy.
Very nice. Like that.
You're welcome.
Well done. Well done. So that's Fran versus the Machine. And so now we're going to transition to our Mr. Relevant of the night, our big interview with Bruce Feldman from Fox Sports. He's going to talk about the QB, the book that he wrote about the making of the modern quarterback, what he sees from the explosive athletes in this year's draft class. And he has a lot of inside knowledge on Chip Kelly. And he talks about what he's seen from Chip in his first couple of years in the NFL, including a great story about Kevin Sumlin from Texas A&M, who watched Chip Kelly's first game and then went to draw something on the whiteboard, stuff that he's seeing for what Chip is bringing to the NFL. Some great insight from Bruce Feldman. Let's send it over to the interview now.
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
We're pleased to be joined here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com by Fox Sports college football analyst Bruce Feldman, whom you can follow on Twitter at Bruce Feldman CFB. And one of the first things I want to ask you about is we're a big fan of the freak list that you put together every offseason that compiles the best athletes in college football. Now that we're at the combine where these guys really shine, who are some of those guys that you're excited to see who you think are going to do really well in the drills this weekend?
You know, Sammy Coates from Auburn is one of them. He's a big athletic receiver. Now, his hands are inconsistent at best, but he is a guy who is a 42-inch vertical jump guy. He's a you know, muscled up 6'2", 205 guy. Jordan Phillips is a defensive lineman from Oklahoma. He's 6'6", 330. I just talked to his old D-line coach, is now an assistant with the Green Bay Packers. I just talked to him like a couple hours ago. He was like, right now at 6'6", 330, he could stand here and do a backflip. So now, does that mean he's going to be a great defensive lineman in the NFL?
Not
if they can get him motivated and cranked up, maybe. We'll see. Those are guys I would say to keep an eye on. Keep an eye on Philip Dorsett, receiver from Miami. I think he's the fastest man in Indianapolis right now. You know, those would be the ones, you know, to really keep watching. I think Bryce Petty will impress some people in some of the different kind of drills, because he's a guy I could see actually covering kicks at one point. He's kind of got a Rambo quality to him.
Now, it's interesting, I want to transition to the quarterback position, because you wrote a novel called The QB, The Making of the Next Generation of Quarterbacks. It actually has Nick Foles on the cover. I know you didn't select the picture for that.
I did not select the picture.
You had a lot
of
questions about
that. We wanted Aaron Rodgers on the picture, but I lost that. But Chip Kelly was very gracious in his time and in helping me with the book, and I appreciated that. So,
what are some of the challenges that NFL teams are having in projecting these quarterbacks who played now? I mean, colleges are primarily playing these spread offenses. Yeah. You talked about Bryce Petty. You talked about the guys coming to spread system. What are the challenges that they're having going from college to the NFL?
Well, I think it's a little bit of, first of all, I'll use the example. I use this in the book, was Johnny Manziel was one of the guys I followed. Johnny Manziel on the offense he was in at Texas A&M never did anything with the protections. It was all on the center who did everything. So, you know, there's a couple of scenes in the book where, later in the book, where you see Kevin O'Connell, who's now the Browns' new quarterback coach, was the board guy for getting Johnny Manziel and Logan Thomas ready. And Johnny Manziel, you see, knows nothing about protection. So when he comes here to Indianapolis, you know, he's had about a month of a crash course to learn exactly, or as best he can, what's supposed to happen where, okay, who's the mic here? What are we doing? And have any semblance of a clue. And I think for guys like that, you know, that's a hard thing to learn. You know, it used to be, and Kevin and O'Connell and I joked about this, you'd look at a roster and go, okay, you know, Brian Urlacher's the middle linebacker, because that's what he's listed as, but maybe not in terms of in that defensive set of what the offensive line and the offense is going to be adjusting to. And so much of the game is problem solving, you know, and that's why Peyton Manning is still terrific and why Tom Brady is excellent. And I think, you know, Aaron Rodgers was a big part of the QB book because he kept on honing his craft and had to learn a lot of different things. And I think ultimately, you know, to go back to what college football is now, it's a different game than what the NFL has. There's elements of the college game. You'll see a little of Gus Malzahn stuff and Mike Leach stuff up in the NFL. The Patriots have incorporated some of it. But at the root, there's still a lot of different things that are the bread and butter of what they're doing. And I think some of the challenges, quite honestly, and I see it with Johnny Manziel, I see it with Jameis Winston, is, you know, what worked for you in college, they're going to take that away. You know, Vince Young was a great college player, but, and I, you know, I talked to a couple of personnel people for the book, and one of the things they said is, you know, the NFL eventually will take away what you're great at, and what do you got next? Vince Young didn't have an answer for that. Johnny Manziel, at this point, does not have an answer for that.
So, in your estimation, Bruce, who do you think is the number three quarterback in this draft class? When you look at Winston, you look at Mariota, obviously they're considered the top two. You talked about Petty already. Who maybe else could fit into that conversation to be the third quarterback here?
You know, and I wouldn't say this for a Chip Kelly team, but I think Sean Mannion is a guy who people may come away going, oh, yeah, that guy actually throws it pretty good, and he's very smart. Sean Mannion played in a system which is more similar to what NFL teams typically do than a lot of these other guys. Bryce Petty's far off the radar because of Baylor and what they did. You know, there's no route tree for Baylor. It's all leverage-based, run to open grass, you know, kind of stuff. Whereas Sean Mannion, who's got good size, he's probably a below-average athlete for a quarterback, but he's got a very good arm, and he's very smart, and he's very cerebral. I think Sean Mannion is a guy who could move into the number three spot. Brett Hundley's a guy I spent a lot of time around because he's in Los Angeles. He's at UCLA. He's a very good athlete. He's tough. He's very smart. His offense also is, when Noel Mazzoni runs it, it's a lot of stuff where it's the truest sense of the spread, where it's a lot of bubble screens and a lot of stuff on the perimeter. He's been so inconsistent. That would scare me about Brett's game. You know, he'll impress you if you're a media person. He'll impress you because, you know, he's sharp. But I just worry about the consistency of his arm, whereas I think Mannion, you know, he had a big 2013 because he had one of the best receivers in college football, Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks left, and then all of a sudden it was a much different offense for him there. And he didn't have a great year, but I think he could still, you know, boost his stock some this in the next couple of weeks.
Bruce, last question for you. You talked about how you spoke with Chip Kelly for your book. How much have you followed his career since he's gone from Oregon to the pro ranks to see how that offense would transition, to see how it's evolved?
A lot. You know, I'm a you know, I wouldn't say I'm a Chip, you know, I shouldn't say I'm a Chip Kelly fan. Understood. But I keep an eye on it. And
you're on philadelphia.com, so
yeah,
you can.
Okay, I'm going to go all the way in on it. Yeah, I think he's one of the more fascinating people I've ever covered. I met him at the, I go to the football coaches convention every year. It's a lot of high school and junior college and college coaches from all levels of college football. And I met Chip when he had just gotten the Oregon OC job. Hardly anybody knew who he was. And we talked about a recruiting book I had done. And he was, you know, I'd always heard how smart he was from, like, Mario Cristobal, who's now a line coach at Alabama, said there's this guy that Bellotti just hired is brilliant. You're going to see. And he was right. That was one of the most astute predictions I've ever heard from any coach. And, you know, it's been interesting to watch Chip grow, because I went to the first head coach game he had, which was against Boise State at Boise State. It was a complete debacle. It was LeGarrette Blount punches a guy. You couldn't get a first down. I think their guard, center, guard were all new, and so they looked awful in the game. And he responded really, really well after that, because, you know, he managed the LeGarrette Blount situation, which could have got way uglier. They started to win games, and, you know, he was such a they took on his personality. In the NFL, his first game, I was at Alabama, Texas A&M, and I spent the week with the Aggies while working on the book. It was a Monday night game, if I'm correct.
Washington
Redskins game. Kevin Sumlin's in there. He comes running into the offensive coordinator's office and starts going onto the grease board to draw up something that Chip brought out that people hadn't seen. I don't remember what they have, like 53 plays in the first half.
You got it. Yep.
Crazy numbers. So I am a huge Chip Kelly believer, to the point where, and we and I talked about this before, when, you know, the news was coming out that Ryan Day might get the job, I was like, I remember Chip Kelly saying this guy is going to be a great coach, and if Chip Kelly says it, I'm going to believe it, because I just think he is so smart. So I'm curious to see how he's going to do, you know, to grow forward. Just knowing some of the guys he's, you know, one of the guys I covered a lot is Matt Barkley. I didn't know how Matt was going to fit in with what Chip does, but I know Matt's, you know, a sharp guy. And so, you know, I keep an eye on the Eagles as much as I'm probably more so than almost any other team, just because I want to see what he's doing.
Bruce Feldman from Fox Sports. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at BruceFeldmanCFB. You can also pick up his book, The QB. Bruce, thank you very much for joining us here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
Now it's time for Pick 6.
All right, special thanks to Bruce for joining us here on the podcast. Now we're going to go into our Pick 6. So we're going to do a little draft tonight. Since Saturday is going to be the on-field drills for the quarterbacks, running backs, and wide receivers, we decided to comprise a team made up of one quarterback, two running backs, and three receivers. Fran and I are going to go back and forth here. Now, the one thing to make it more interesting is we cannot select any of the players in the consensus top five rankings from the Fran vs. Machine segment earlier in the show. So that's going to take away some of the big names, so we're going to have to dig a little deeper here to make this work. So, Fran, may I have the honors?
You may. Go ahead. I'll let you start it off.
Okay, so it's a deep class at wide receiver. It's a deep class at running back, but I'm going to take the explosive Devin Smith from Ohio State to start things off. Had nearly 1,000 receiving yards on just 33 receptions. Can track the big ball, the deep ball. I think it would be a nice explosive element to jumpstart my team.
All right, well, I'm going to take your explosive receiver, and I'm going to raise you one with a guy who finished in my top five. Wasn't in the consensus, but that's Sammy Coates out of Auburn. Just under 6'2", 215 pounds. I think he's going to run really, really well tomorrow. I talked about him earlier. I think he's got great playmaking ability. I'm excited to see what he offers as a pro.
All right, so I've got my wide receiver, got my top wide receiver. I could get another one. Tempted to here, but I think I'm going to take one of the backs here. I'm going to go a little TJ Yeldon from Alabama. Go a little off the board there. Someone I think could be very productive here. Probably a little underrated coming to the draft process. So I'm going to get myself a nice big physical back there in TJ Yeldon, who also does have, I think, just the overall experience to really, really, really bolster my team.
Yeah, that's a pretty good pick. I'm going to stick with the wide receiver position, though. I took Sammy Coates, who I think is a big explosive guy that can win downfield, and I'm going to pair him with Jalen Strong out of Arizona State.
Ooh, I like
6 foot four, 212 pounds. You know, I don't know that he's a great athlete, but I think he's got very good hands, has the great ball skills that can go up and win in contested situations. I really like what Strong brings to the table. He's a Philly guy, so happy to bring him home.
Yeah,
Jalen
nice.
Strong. I'm going to pair him with Sammy Coates there.
I like that. I like that. Let's see here. So, you know what? Why not? I think I'm going to take another running back. Go Jay Ajayi, Boise State.
Very
someone
nice.
Someone who I know you like personally, and
definitely
I thought
do.
That you might snag him already. So knowing that, seeing your rankings, have an idea of who you like, you know, I'm thinking here, maybe let me grab my guy here. So pairing him with Yeldon, definitely a nice 1-2 punch there in the backfield.
Yeah, no question about it. I like that pick from you. Since you went with another running back there, I might as well jump in there and see if I can snag one. I'm going to go with Josh Robinson, the running back out of Mississippi State. I think he's kind of flying under the radar a little bit. You know, he came out of Mississippi State. He was an underclassman. I had him at 5'9", 215 pounds. He doesn't have the physical dimensions you'd like, but I really love his toughness. I think he's got very good burst in the hole, and I think he shows the vision and patience. This kid is going to stick in the NFL for a long time. He reminds me a little bit of a Maurice Jones-Drew, kind of like Brandon Oliver, what he brought to the San Diego Chargers last year as a rookie out of the University of Buffalo, nicknamed Bowling Ball. I like Josh Robinson.
Ooh, let's see. So I'm going to go receiver here, and I'm like, do I just add just another touch of explosiveness? Shine at the Senior Bowl, Philip Dorsett. From the U. You know what? Him and Devin Smith on the outside. Got my interior punch with the running game. Well, I'm just gonna have fun throwing the ball over the field here. So I'm going to go Philip Dorsett with my fourth round pick here.
Yeah, I like that pick. So you put together quite the explosive receiving core. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to raise you a receiver. I'm going to take Rashad Green out of Florida State, a guy that I think is also flying under the radar a little bit. 5'11", 180 pounds. I think he's going to run pretty well. He's a high school track standout. When I watched him, and again, I'm not comparing him to this player, but he reminds me in the way that he runs, the way that he moves, reminds me a little bit of Torrey Holt in the, you know, in the way that he can win after the catch. He kind of has those loose hips that Torrey Holt had for all those years for the greatest show on turf. I'm going to take Rashad Green to round out my receiving core.
So since I have these explosive receivers, got to have someone to distribute the ball. And I'll give myself someone a little bit of athleticism, you know, play for a top-notch team, knows what it takes to throw the ball to a big-time receiver. I'm going to go Blake Sims, Alabama, as a quarterback of my team.
You tried to snatch him up. You got him out of my grasp here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to, knowing that you can't take a quarterback, I'm obviously not going to go that direction now. I'm going to take a running back here. And the running back I'm going to go with is David Cobb, a guy I really thought about taking with my first pick at the running back position. But a guy, a no-nonsense runner. He's got very good vision. He gets downhill violently. He runs through first contact. I talked about how important that was to me, you know, earlier on when we talked about the running back position. He's not the greatest athlete, but he gets the job done consistently well. I like David Cobb, and I think he'll be a very good option for teams looking for running backs, possibly as early as day two, but most likely on day three.
All right, so, you know, I want to have a receiver with some good size, you know, some experience both the outside and in the slot. I'm going to go Nelson Aguilar from USC, underclassman. That's going to round up my team.
And he came off very well in his interview yesterday. I was really impressed when Nelson Aguilar took the stage. So to round out the draft, my Mr. Irrelevant, I'm going to go with Hudson Mason, the quarterback out of Georgia.
Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to talk about him earlier. He's not here at the combine. And look, I know he doesn't have the greatest physical tools. You know, he's 6'2", 207 pounds. His arm is not great. And, you know, and some would say it's not even good. It's definitely, you know, an average arm by NFL standards. But I think he's a savvy quarterback that, if he did have a stronger arm, would be one of the best in this class. Physical limitations limit his starting potential, but the mental part of the game is there for him to stick in the NFL. I think he throws with anticipation. He's accurate. He's a good decision maker. He only threw 7 interceptions this year in his first year as a starter. I think he's got the ability to stick in the NFL as a backup. And in this class, I don't know that you can ask for much more.
No. I'll run through my team real quick. Devin Smith, T.J. Yeldon, Jay Ajayi, Philip Dorsett, Blake Sims, and Nelson Aguilar. For the receiver from USC running out my draft class.
And I went Hudson Mason at quarterback with Josh Robinson, David Cobb at running back, Sammy Coates, Jalen Strong, and Rashad Green at wide receiver.
Okay. Jalen Strong pick. That's where I'm going to go there. So
it was a strong pick.
That was very nicely done. So we're going to stick with the receivers here, and our first unofficial visit is going to be Maryland wide receiver Stephon Diggs. Shine at Good Counsel, a very, very outstanding prep program there in Maryland, decided to stay home. So we talked about staying home with the Terrapins and how explosive he can be when he gets the ball in his hands in the open field. Here's our unofficial visit with wide receiver Stephon Diggs.
The unofficial visit.
We're pleased to be joined by Maryland wide receiver Stephon Diggs. Now, Stephon, you are Maryland born and raised.
Yes.
What was this decision, or why did you decide to stay home for college?
Mainly because I'm a leader. I don't follow anybody. I mean, I feel like I wanted to start something where I was from. A couple guys have stayed home prior to me. Vernon Davis, Torrey Smith is from the area. A lot of Sean Merriman. A lot of guys are from the area, and I wanted to be one of the few guys who started the snowball effect. I mean, we got a couple more good recruits these past couple of years, and I wanted to be a part of a program that progressed. So, I mean, yeah.
How important was it having Keenan McCardell, who played for a long time in the NFL, work with you at Maryland, and kind of help show you the ropes and grow as a receiver?
Going into my junior year is so crucial. Your junior year is so crucial, and to have him be a key component in my success is just amazing. I was blessed to have him as a coach. I mean, his time he had in the game coaching, it's just you can't compare it to nobody. So I appreciate him as a coach, and I still call him if I need something with this kind of route or how do I do this. So he's a great guy.
How do you make magic happen when you get the ball in the open field? What is your secret?
I can't give you the formula to that one, because if I give it to you, you're going to give it to somebody
else. It's on film. It's on tape. I mean,
as far as playmaking, I mean, I just take what the defense give me. As far as I understand coverage and I understand defenses to the point where I know what's open, I know what's not, I know where I can run and where I can't.
Now, everyone talks about toughness in the NFL. You played through a lacerated kidney?
Yeah.
Against Penn State?
Yeah. It happened on the goal line. I tried to stretch out and score. I got hit in the kidney. I thought it was the usual stuff until after the game, but during the game, I was like, there's no worries. I'm going to keep fighting it out. We're going to come out here with a win, and we did.
How important, my last question for you, Stephon, is this. How important is to have that versatility where you have the kick returner experience and someone who can step in on day one and be able to help a football team?
That's crucial. I mean, because it makes yourself more valuable, I would say. I mean, because I don't play receiver, but I play special teams too. I wanted to play some gunner at my school, but I play so many offensive stuff. So
we love special teams in Philadelphia.
So hopefully I get to be a part of that.
Excellent. Stephon Diggs, wide receiver from Maryland. Best of luck. Thanks for joining us here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
On the clock.
All right, so it's time for a little either-or action. And, you know, Bo Wolf is outstanding at coming up with these situations.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah, so, you know, they might not be as good. I'm going to give it a crack here. So, since we're talking about we're going to do a little mix here. We're going to talk about some of the guys who were on the field today and some of the guys who are going to be taking the field tomorrow. So
Okay. We'll
start with offensive line. Would you rather take Jake Fisher of Oregon, shine in the position drills, helped his stock today, as a potential first-round pick at number 20 for the Eagles, or TJ Clemmings, one round later, who very athletic, a little raw, needs some time to develop. Which one would you go with?
Oof, that's interesting. Well, I've already told you that I like Fisher more than Clemmings. So there's that. So
yes.
I think I would take him over Clemmings, especially if I want him to start right away. I think Clemmings may need a little bit of seasoning. I think he's got the ability to be the best lineman in the draft. But Fisher, especially right now, I think is the better player. But that being said, in the second round, if Clemmings is going to be there, I may take Clemmings there in the second round. So I'm going to take the value there.
All right. So we're going to go to the running back position now. Todd Gurley, you love him.
Love him.
Number 20.
Okay.
First round pick for the Eagles.
Okay.
Or Amir Abdullah from Nebraska in the second round.
I think just from the respect that you've got LeSean McCoy in tow already, you know, adding Amir Abdullah with his versatile skill set to that backfield with him, with Darren Sproles, with Chris Polk. I think Abdullah brings the ability to affect the game in a number of different ways, much like Darren Sproles does. I think I'm going to take Amir Abdullah there in the second round. I'm going to, again, go with the value there.
Okay. Third, our last one here. Okay, it's a wide receiver combo.
Ooh, I like these. Okay.
So we're going to go, it's a little size, a little speed.
Okay.
Okay. Rashad Perriman, someone who you like a lot.
Sure.
And the gentleman we just talked to, Stephon Diggs.
Okay.
So you get a little size, a little sizzle.
Okay.
Or Philip Dorsett of Miami, who's obviously going to be the speedster, and Tony Lippett of Michigan State.
Oof. All right. So you got Tony Lippett, who I like. I think he's kind of flying under the radar a little bit. Really savvy route runner. You said he's with Philip Dorsett, correct?
Correct, yes.
And then the first combo was Breshad Perriman and Stephon Diggs.
So basically I'm looking at
sure.
The consensus is that Perriman would be the better big receiver of the two over Lippett, and that you would have Dorsett who would be the better speedster over Diggs.
Correct.
And you're probably going to have to use a first-round pick.
Yep, this goes. This absolutely comes into play.
Okay, so you probably would have to use the first-round pick on Perriman, and you could get Stephon Diggs later in the draft.
Sure.
Dorsett and Lippett are going to be, you know, day two, maybe early day three picks.
I think I'm going to go with the two and three. If you were to stack these receivers on a board, I would say that Breshad Perriman is the number one, and I would say that Stephon Diggs is number four. I'm going to go with the value at number two and number three there with Lippett and Dorsett. I think Dorsett can bring that special teams value. Diggs obviously can provide that as well. Dorsett's going to run out of the gym tomorrow. And then I really like Lippett. I really like his game, his toughness, his ability to separate. I like Tony Lippett.
All right, nicely done, Fran. So we're going to send it now to our second unofficial visit. Merritt Alford, a former track star. And one of the things is you see a lot of these guys who can run really fast, but what does it take to take that ability to run fast and transition it to the football field? We talk about that with Merritt Alford from West Virginia, our second unofficial visit.
The unofficial visit.
We're pleased to be joined by West Virginia wide receiver Merritt Alford. And Mario, the first thing I have to ask you, you grew up in a house as one of 14 children?
Yes, sir, I did.
So where were you in the pecking order?
I was the baby. I'm the baby.
You're the youngest of the 14 children.
Yes, sir.
So what was it like having 13 siblings kind of show you the ropes and growing up in what must have been a crazy household?
Yeah, man. My mom and my stepdad, they did a pretty good job raising, some respectful young men and women. So, I mean, it was great. I love all my sisters and brothers. I love my whole family. So, I mean, they did a pretty good job of raising me, as a young man, respectful young man. And I gotta give my hats off to my brothers and sister and truly my mom and my stepfather.
How many brothers, how many sisters?
I got six brothers, seven sisters.
So since you're the baby and you have all those women in the household, are you looked at to be like the guy, the man in the house, so take care of all of them at times, even though you're the youngest one?
Yeah, I will always protect my sisters. Like me and my brother, we always protect them. So I mean, I protect them. Yeah.
So being the youngest of 14, did that help in athletics? You want to play with the older brothers. You want to play with the other kids. So, you got to raise your game a little bit to be able to hang with them. Do you think that helped you along developing your athletic skills?
Just growing up, me and my mom, we used to always go watch my big brother play. He played football back in his high school, junior high school days. So, I mean, I just watch him a lot. I grew up just around him, and he loved the game, but he didn't pursue it. So I mean, I just took his footstep, just build on what I had to do.
So you were a track star?
Yes.
In high school, what was the transition of going from a track star to a football player?
I wasn't really a track star like that.
Okay.
But I won the 100 meter my junior year. I got disqualified my senior year.
Winning 100 meter dash is a pretty big deal.
Yeah,
like somewhat of an athlete.
Yeah,
it's not track star maybe, but
yeah, I mean, yeah,
it's impressive.
But it's great, man. Like I said, I use my speed on the field a lot, so running track did help me. It did transition to football with my speed, getting out of my breaks and all that. So it helped me a lot.
Now your freshman year at West Virginia, you played in the slot.
Yeah.
Then you moved outside. Can you explain what the differences are in working in the slot and on the outside?
The differences are in the slot, you really you got to read linebackers. If you have a shallow route or something, you might have to convert it to but it depends on, what that back linebacker over there doing. You may have to keep it across if it in man, or if they in zone, you probably just had to hook it up. Just little things like that you had to read. But on the outside, it was pretty much, do your own thing, pretty much one-on-ones. I mean, you just got to convert routes. And, I mean, it's pretty simple, not that bad.
Now, you led the Big 12 in touchdown receptions last season. What is the secret? What's the key to getting in the end zone?
With me, man, the end zone been a huge part of my life since day one. I mean, I find a way to get in there no matter what. If you speed, you know, if the ball comes to me, fight for it. Any way I can, I get in the end zone. So it's just been something I've been doing my whole life.
Who is the toughest cornerback that you went against this past season in a game?
I would have to say Cyrus Jones from Alabama. He's pretty good, had great technique, so he's probably the toughest.
What's it like going through this pre-draft process and seeing all the other top receivers and really all the other top players at all the positions here compete for the same thing, the right to be drafted into the NFL?
I mean, like them, you know, it's a dream come true, you know. I see all these boys, ESPN, all of them. Kevin White, of course, he played with me. He one of the top receivers. Amari Cooper. I mean, you know, I salute them guys. But like I said, I'm here too, so I'm – like I said, what they can do, I can do. So it really don't matter.
West Virginia wide receiver Mario Alford, thank you very much for joining us here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, Fran is just getting in the zone here. He's laid back in the chair. He looks like that. He could go for probably another 2 hours here, but we're not going to do that to you here.
It's still early.
It is still early. Well, not really. We're actually in the final segment here. The draft mailbag come up here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. And when we get back to Philadelphia, we're going to be hoping that our cars start. Otherwise, we will be calling AAA.
I will be calling AAA ourselves. Probably on Sunday.
So our draft mailbag, we solicit the questions on Twitter. Try to answer them the best as Fran can, since he's the one who's taking the lead on this. First one comes from @TLindstrom17, wants to know if UCLA quarterback Brett Hundley is there in the second round for the Eagles. Should the Eagles or would the Eagles take him?
Well, I don't know what they will do, so I don't know if they would.
If you are Chip Kelly. That's the question there.
Well, I think here's the question, and this is these answers are not ones that you and I have and not ones that anyone in the media really has, is how do you feel about Brett Hundley, the person? Because when you look at him on the field, you have the great athleticism. You've got the strong arm. I think he flashes the ability to be accurate, although he does not do it consistently. And just the poise in the pocket, the ability to make good decisions with the football, not take sacks, get the ball out quicker. Those are the big questions that you've got with him. But if you think that he's coachable, if you think that some of those issues that he has can be worked through, that maybe they weren't him, maybe they were the factors of the system that he played in, then, yeah, I think you might pull the trigger, especially in this quarterback class where, you know, we've talked about it. There is no hard and set in stone number three guy at this point, you know, in terms of the consensus. So I think if you feel that way about Brett Hundley, then maybe you pull the trigger there. Otherwise, I don't know that you're going to draft him at all.
It's going to be very interesting because he gave a great interview.
Sure.
In the combine. I could see him winning over the coach. And in that aspect, the question is, will he be able to develop, like you said, on the field? Second question comes from @SouthJersMick. Wants to know, why is Tyler Lockett not getting the love that players, similar players like Philip Dorsett are?
Well, I think when you look at Lockett, and here's the thing, I mean, and he pointed out, there's a lot of those smaller receivers in this draft class. You've got, you know, Devin Smith, 6 foot, so I don't know if you'd factor him in, but 5'9" and a half, Philip Dorsett. You've got Justin Hardy from East Carolina, who's just over 5'10". Jamison Crowder from Duke is 5'8". Titus Davis, I think, kind of fits in that role, even though, you know, he's just under 6'1". But there's a lot of these guys who are on the smaller side. And Tyler Lockett, sure, he's there. He's a 5'9" and a half. He was a very experienced starter. He has 249 career catches, 29 touchdowns, started 42 games for Kansas State. But when you watch him on tape, I don't know that he's got that speed to burn that you would expect from a guy that size. I don't know that he's got that great separation quickness that some of these other guys have. I don't know that he's got that athleticism to set himself apart. And I think you look at a guy like Justin Hardy from East Carolina and you pair him next to a guy like Tyler Lockett, I don't think athletically that they're in the same realm at this point. So Lockett, I think, is a nice player. I think he's definitely going to get drafted. I just don't know that you can put him at that level with those guys despite his great career.
All right, our last question comes from our good friend @PennSir76, a fan of the program. So we're going to, you know, finish off on a high note here. He asked about two players in particular. Rashad Perriman, we've already delved into. plenty on the podcast, so I don't think we need to ask about him. But how about Air Canada, South Alabama's Brandon Bridge, who supposedly has the best arm in this year's draft class?
Well, he's definitely got one of the best ones. And I enjoyed the story he told when he spoke to the media yesterday, where he told how he got the nickname Air Canada. Obviously, coming from Alcorn State, Steve McNair. So he got the, you know, people started calling him Air. And when he was from, you know, people obviously know that he was born in Toronto. He's from Canada. So people started calling him Air Canada. And it wasn't until afterwards they realized that's actually the name of an actual airline. But a very interesting player just because of his size, 6'4", 229 pounds. I think he's going to run well tomorrow. So he's got the athleticism that teams will covet. I think he's got as high an upside as really as most of these quarterbacks in this draft. But similar to Hundley, there are some issues. You know, you love his arm and his toughness that he'll flash in the pocket. If someone can mold him and make him more consistent in terms of his accuracy, in terms of his decision-making, I think they'll have a starting quarterback. But like I said, the poise in the pocket, the decision-making, his accuracy is very up and down. Those are the issues there with Bridge. Ultimately, I think he's a day three pick.
How much do you factor competition level when evaluating these players? Understand that, you know, Winston and Mariota are facing some of the best of the best, and not for nothing, you know, Bridge is not going against the top-notch competition.
Well, I mean, the first thing you want to find is see if they did play against any type of competition. So, sure, he played for South Alabama, but you look at his game against Mississippi State earlier in the year, and he's making unbelievable throws down the field on the money that receivers are dropping, unfortunately. So those numbers don't factor into his stats ultimately. But you look at the competition, but still, at the end of the day, you're still just looking for traits. So regardless of what the successes were, you're looking, can you start checking off boxes? Does he have the arm? Does he have the accuracy? Does he show good decision making? Does he show the poise in the pocket? And if he's showing all those things, then you have to take that into account. And now when you're comparing him to a guy that, like a Jameis Winston, like a Marcus Mariota, obviously the competition can be a deciding factor, but I think that can put him in the realm of discussion there.
Fran, outstanding work as always.
Thank you, Chris. You as well.
I'm like the point guard here. I try to be like the quarterback. Just get the ball out quickly, spread offense, and let you do damage.
Good decision maker.
That's going to do it for the Friday night edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. On Saturday's show, we're going to preview the defensive line and linebacker workouts. So we'll do a little more Fran versus Machine. We'll also have some special guests and a whole lot more. So make sure to join us once again. Until then, have a great Eagles night.